everybody. Welcome to the Friends of Foreman Animation Forum podcast live.
Yeah.
From Ottawa. The Ottawa
International
Animation
Festival
2011. Live show with Dino Stamatopoulos.
I told you it's not as hard as it
looks. Stamatopoulos.
Stamatopoulos.
Clap it down.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm very nervous.
Yes. Now, you are an accomplished writer, actor, director, thespian, dramaturgist.
Language, Joel, language.
I'm not a vocabulist, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
creator of animated works.
Yes. I'm no Adventure Time.
Whoa.
The place was packed.
It was packed.
Well, this is respectable, I think.
This is very respectable.
This is mostly podcast fans, right?
Yeah, you guys are all fans, huge fans of the podcast, right?
Yeah, listen every episode.
Every episode.
Yeah. I love it.
Now, we're going to run through your whole oeuvre.
Wait, that's French.
No French tonight.
List of things. That's the translation. You have created works for Cartoon Network. For the Adult Swim. And you also are on the TV show Community as a character, Starburns.
Starburns, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I assume that you will your sideburns to grow into star shapes.
Or is that just natural?
Before I started doing it, there was this character that Dan Harmon wanted to do called Starburns. He thought it would be funny if there was a guy who shaved his starburns into star or his sideburns into stars and then got angry when people called him Starburns instead of knowing his name. And they just said, oh, this character is going to be great. He's just going to be a fucking asshole doofus. And I'm like, yeah, that'll be a funny character. Then I get a text from him. Start growing your facial hair out. You're going to be Starburns. I'm like, fantastic. And I'm not an actor, really. I mean, you know, no.
Yeah, interesting. No, I meant that in the literal questioning. That's surprising to me.
Yeah. I mean, I'll do a couple voices on, you know, my cartoons. But, I don't even know what this character's about, really. He's really just about the sideburns.
Yeah.
And he just grows something different every season. Like, he got the top hat the second season. And then this season, if you saw the episode yesterday, he's got a bearded dragon on his shoulder.
Ooh.
Which is actually a lot of the show... the writers get the ideas from the actors who play the parts, and I do have a bearded dragon. I just got a bearded dragon for my kid called Nichols, and I don't carry him around on my shoulder.
Your kid's called Nicholas or the dragons?
Sorry?
Nicholas
the dragon
the
or the kid?
Kid or the dragon?
Name.
Well, it's easy to confuse my kid and the lizard, because the lizard, the bearded dragon's called Nichols, and my child is called Tigger.
Ah, okay.
They're almost interchangeable. I confuse them.
I kind of combine tattooing and facial or hair growth. I have a eagle chest, eagle hair chest growth that I have developed.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
let's check.
I can really come through the shape of an eagle.
Take it off, baby.
Not done.
So for Halloween, is it just your go-to costume, just Starburns? Makes it easy?
God, no. I was going to say that I grew my sideburns out for the first episode, and I went into makeup at 6 in the morning, and they shaved everything off. And they glued these stupid-looking things in. And it took hours to get them to look like anything right. And that first episode, I'm wearing just bad fake sideburns that shaped like stars. And then for all the other episodes, I grew them out. Yeah, and I don't know if you could tell, but I have very gray sideburns, and they darkened them. Yeah, I'm an old star.
I thought those were paste-ons.
So I shaved them into stars, but no one ever notices when I'm out in public because they meld into my gray, ashen, dead face. So
I think silver stars would be kind of nice.
Silver stars, yeah.
Yeah, a sheriff. Yeah.
But but now they've created this season fake Starburns for me that look good. Okay. So now I don't have to grow them out at all.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a popular Halloween costume now.
Well, here's hoping, because I get one penny for every costume. $1 trillion.
So if someone trick-or-treats as Starburns, you give them a treat and they have to give you residuals back?
Yeah, no. I get nothing. There's actually, my brother emailed me like a year or two ago saying, hey, how much are you getting for this? And it was a Starburns t-shirt that NBC is selling with my stupid face on it. And I'm like, nah, I don't know anything about it. Yeah.
Well, moving on.
Moving back.
Moving forward and behind. Now, you have done some shows for Cartoon Network, Moral Oral being one. You guys all know that show? Fans.
Are you applauding more for third season? Or?
I am.
The season that got me canceled?
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It was the family of the David and Goliath creator?
No. They actually, with the Lutheran Church, did send us a cease and desist letter. No, I think it was actually, I forget who it was. It might have been Art Clokey's people. But they had no leg to stand on, really. Okay. First season was just a very goofy show, and by third season, I was making just drama for the Adult Swim Comedy Network. And Mike Lazo called me up, who loved the show, and he's like, Dino, I gotta tell you, these episodes are depressing, man. I can't show them anymore. They're making me sad. And I said, I understand.
Is that kind of a win, though, in a way? I mean, to get to that level?
No.
No.
I really thought it was like the best season. I thought, okay, this show's going to be like by season five, amazing. And no, he cut like half our order, and I had to like rush an ending. But I understood completely. I mean, he bought some goods, and I ripped him off, basically. I did not give him a comedy show. So,
well, speaking of comedy and shows, the overall theme, which brought you all here, is comedy writing for adult TV animation. So we've talked a little bit about Moral Oral, but you have some other shows also in the works and currently on Mary Shelley's Frankenhole.
Mary Shelley's Frankenhole, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, let it ripple.
I have adapted to thrive on awkward pauses, so you don't have to fill anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did this show come about, and the origin of its first conception, the first time you came up with the title, how it makes you feel now, and where it's going in the future?
Well, I always loved Frankenstein and monsters. I grew up on like the old time monster movies, and I wanted to do a show based on those. And I actually first pitched it to Sci-Fi Network, which is why it has that time travel aspect in it. I'm sure you don't know anything about the show, but
I am nodding. No, I do. I saw the clips online.
Right.
He
asked me right before the show. So it hasn't aired yet, has it? I'm like, no, there's a whole season.
I met season two has not aired yet. I'm going to camp out.
No, that's okay. You're a very nice man, and not a lot of people know about the show. But I came up with this idea where people come to the scientist Frankenstein, and because he never got his PhD. I don't know if you know that. But
they self-proclaimed doctor.
Yeah. and just like people from all historical backgrounds come to him for crazy, crazy medical advice. And we came up with like a list of maybe 300 titles, and one of them, my least favorite, was Frankenhole, because I thought it sounded like a porno. But But I thought it made sense because they shoot there through these wormholes, and it is Frankenstein. So I threw it in there, and of course that's the one, you know, that Mike Lazo got hearts in his eyes for. And he said, "We're calling it Frankenhole," and I said, "Oh, great." And so then I said, "Can we add Mary Shelley before it?" Because that, to me, was funny that this gothic writer who's dead and can't do anything about it has her name coupled with a porno title. And now I'm forever linked to her on the internet, you know.
But would that work with any other such writers?
I guess so. I mean,
Dickens
is an obvious choice.
Frankendellum.
Yeah. Well, actually, this season we're mini naming the actual episodes, so it's like what are some of them?
Vagina.
Yeah, well, vagina. I forget who it's. I think it's H.P. Lovecraft's vagina. I picked like science fiction and fantasy writers, and then put a stupid title behind it. Yeah, we'll watch that whole episode if we want. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, we should.
Because we're gonna have time to kill. Believe me, I'm already running out of things to say here.
Yeah. Well, we do have party games too.
Oh, good.
So we'll get to those.
A huge twister mat is coming out for all of us.
This is it. It's like hand on design, left hand on.
It's gonna get into it, people.
Floor. Do you want to show some clips of Mary Shelley's Frankenhole, and do you guys want to see them?
Yeah, Alan, do you? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Oh, there's the computer.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure the clips are set up because we brought them from one computer to another, but let me try the vagina episode, H.P. Lovecraft's vagina. Basically, to set up this episode, Victor Frankenstein and Elizabeth have a very sitcom argument about who's better, men or women, and they decide to switch roles, and she's going to make a monster, and he's going to have a baby. He gives himself a vagina. And so she, being a woman, screws up completely. Her monster sucks. But the man creates this vagina. So let's... this is when he first displays it. Hopefully, if it's set up. If not,
bear with me here.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to put it on full screen.
Can you guys see through me?
Okay, let me put it full screen first. Enter full screen. Okay, that's Elizabeth, and here we go.
Behold, my greatest creation yet.
Oh, sorry. I gotta go a little forward here. It was not where I set it up.
I love it so far.
Yeah. You want to watch the whole episode?
Yes.
All right.
Sorry about everything.
For me. Jesus. Go fuck yourselves. Okay. Here.
Couple questions.
Yeah.
First of all, it was hilarious, and the writing is really top notch. What is your writing process like? And are you coming up with the idea, writing a draft, and then working with a bunch of writers?
I had the idea of, because they wanted to make this season more like a sitcom gone wrong. So I thought, let's take the most popular sitcom trope, which is a man and a woman switching places, and figure out how to do that with Frankenstein. And so I thought, you know, if Frankenstein gave himself a vagina. And then sat down with a few writers and came up with an outline, then I went and wrote it, you know. And they didn't all work that way. Some of them I just wrote completely on my own. Some of them was more of a collaborative process. Yeah.
So. Is there an approval process through Cartoon Network with the script?
Toward the beginning, because they weren't really happy with season one. Neither was I, really. Because it was more like an anthology show. You know, it was like Fantasy Island. Mm-hmm. Like a character would come
and he would be there just for one episode, like Gandhi would come, or Elvis J.
Gay Jesus?
Not gay,
Jesus.
Jesus did come.
Andy Dick Jesus.
Andy Dick did. Yeah. We have an Andy Dick episode this season because I wanted to write an episode where Andy would hang out with famous people from history and they would die on him, and which isn't hilarious, I'll admit, but and then Death, the Grim Reaper, becomes fascinated with him, and he's like, look, I gotta pick your brain for a while, I need to, you know, hang out with you, you're my hero, people are just dying left and right around you. So I actually wrote it where it was Andy Dick, and then Adult Swim just said, make it Jesus. So it's basically Andy Dick, but as Jesus hanging out with Joan of Arc and Abraham Lincoln, and then them dying on him, and then Death kind of just like picking his brain for the episode, and then Death, because he hangs out with them, ends up dying. Andy Dick kills Death, basically.
How much control do you have over the look? Because I do love the puppet style.
Yeah.
The fact that there's an actual jaw that's being animated, right, versus something in post.
Well, I wanted to do something different than Moral Laurel, which was based, you know, on the David and Goliath Rankin-Bass sticker mouth. It was like replacement little stickers that they would put on for every shape of every syllable. And so I wanted to do something different, and I thought, like, the jaws would be good. And also because we had a lot of celebrities, especially in the first season, I thought, what if we took a celebrity's face and just glued it on a puppet? And that's an easy thing to say. But one of the puppet fabricators actually came up with this beautiful sort of origami Photoshop thing where it is actual, like even the costumes are Photoshopped. Like we would have actors and just people from around the studio come in wearing different outfits. We take a picture of them, shrink them down, and glue them on the puppets, basically.
So they're all constructed out of paper?
Yeah, it's, I think it's more of like a sort of vinyl kind of paper that they Photoshop, and it's a little stronger than paper, right, but definitely, yeah. I think the faces are actually paper, yeah.
What's the studio that animates it?
Well, first season it was at Shadow Machine, which does Robot Chicken, and did Moral Laurel, and then I took it to my own studio, which is Starburns, which is in Burbank and is literally a castle. It's like, all right, not literally, but it's like a Hollywood facade, Disney-esque castle on the outside. It's actually a fun place. You guys should come by.
Yeah.
I love showing everyone around there.
Are you, with your production company, looking to develop more?
Yeah. We're actually...
Obviously, you would.
Yeah.
No, that's it. We're just going to do the two.
Just one and be done.
Yeah. Yeah, if we could get through the year, we want to do... Dan Harmon is doing an Adult Swim show with someone. He's co-creating it. And it's going to be... We're going to do everything. It's this is actually I think it's Flash animation that he's doing. Called Rick and Morty, I think it's called. And I say we, but you know, I'll get an email, hey, guess what we're doing? I'm like, oh, we're doing that. There's a new Johnny Depp movie out, and I guess we did the opening credits for it.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm just a drunk. I don't know.
Yeah. Getting back to you being a drunk. What you love Mountain Dew, obviously.
I've never had straight...
just Mountain Dew.
Yeah, straight Mountain Dew.
Delicious, refreshing, yeah. Effervescent.
Vanilla flavored.
What is your background? How did you get in this crazy business of animation and get into where you are right now?
Well, I started in Chicago, which is a big improv comedy town.
Chicago?
Chicago. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Let me go into the background of Chicago. There was a cow that kicked over a lantern.
Yeah. And comedy was born.
Improv, shout out.
of the farm, the burning farm, and ran to
Second City. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I was just a goofy kid, and when you grow up as a goofy kid in a town where comedy is king,
it was very easy to go into that direction. You know, I was the classic, you know, bullied by handsome people kind of kid. So
handsome bullies are the worst.
They're the worst.
I'm going to hate them because they have to look at them.
They have a lot of ammo.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Too much confidence.
Yeah. So my job was to not get beat up and make them laugh.
Yeah,
and it still really is in some way. I went to Columbia College, not Columbia University, Columbia College in Chicago, spelled with
backwards K.
Yeah,
I know of that school.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, and I met Andy Dick there, and a lot of people, Scott Adsit, who's on 30 Rock now, and Jay Johnston, who's been on Mr. Show and the Sarah Silverman Show, and just a lot of funny, talented people came from there who I still work with today. And Andy Dick was the first to fly out to L.A. and live in a shoebox, and he actually, around that time, The Simpsons first aired, and I became obsessed with it, and I guess I was writing fan fiction. It wasn't sexual fan fiction.
Sexual?
Yeah, I guess it does. I just wanted to write a script for myself, and I just sat in my little studio apartment and wrote a Simpsons script, and I didn't know what I would do with it. I just wanted to write it. I was excited about the show, and Andy called me and he said, you know, I met the reader for The Simpsons, like she reads scripts. And I said, yeah, I wrote a Simpsons script. He said, send it to me. So I sent him this script, which was about, you know, Homer's sperm dying because he worked at a nuclear power plant. And it turns out they did an episode like that after. I'm not saying they stole it, but I mean, it's a pretty obvious thing. He's working at a nuclear power plant, do a sperm episode. So I sent it, and I got a very nice form letter back saying, Dino, you're not ready to write for The Simpsons yet. And all I could see is the word Simpsons. I framed it. I was so excited. I made it big, you know? And I really did. I framed this, and a couple years later, I had nothing to do, so I went to Los Angeles brought my framed picture, and Andy Dick got a job on the Ben Stiller Show, and they wanted to see a writing sample, and I had tons, and I gave them the Simpsons script, and they liked it, and I got on the Ben Stiller Show, and then after that got canceled, I had an agent all of a sudden, and she sent my Simpsons script, the same exact Simpsons script, to the same exact reader at The Simpsons, and she loved it. I went in, and I had the letter with me in my backpack, and she said, this is exactly what The Simpsons used to be. It's gotten so much sillier. This is the show episode has heart. I love it. And I didn't have the heart to bring the letter up, really. But I don't know if she ever read the script. I think she read it the second time. I'm not sure she read it the first time. You know, it's hard to take an unsolicited script and really read it, you know. It was nice. At least they sent me a rejection letter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to have that come back, this would be kind of flattering.
It was. Yeah. I wish I still had the letter.
Oh, you don't have it anymore?
No, I don't know what happened. Through a move, I lost it. Yeah.
So you went on to write for a lot of comedy type things.
Yeah, after that, I went, I read a whole Rolling Stone article about how this Simpson writer, fittingly enough, got a job being the new letterman, and I read this whole article. I'm like, wow, this guy sounds hilarious, and I just wrote like 21 ideas, because I cocky me back then, I put on the head of my packet a blackjack of comedy, you know. 21 hilarious ideas, and I, my agent sent it, and they liked the packet and hired me for the Conan show before it began, and went there and developed the show during the first year of the show. So that was really exciting. Yeah.
So that was, how many writers were on that? It's a team effort, right?
Yeah, I think at that time it was, you know, Robert Smigel, Conan was there a lot for the beginning, and then six other writers at the time.
Okay. Yeah. And then, also, according to your IMDb, there was...
That's always wrong,
by the way. Mr. Show...
That's right, mm-hmm. But not that wasn't the next, but it, yeah, oh. That was the next exciting thing. Definitely.
What was the next most least exciting thing that happened to you right after that?
I quit and got married.
Oh, so that was the least exciting thing.
Apparently, four of the most stressful things happened at the same time. I turned 30. Which didn't seem that stressful. I quit my job at Conan, which didn't seem stressful either, because I'm a real lazy guy. I got married, which wasn't really stressful because she had a boyfriend at the time and was my dominatrix, so
yeah.
I was just doing it to keep her in the country. And then the fourth thing...
So love. Love.
Yeah. We eventually had a Tigger together. which wasn't a mistake. We actually wanted to. But what was the fourth most stressful? Oh, and I moved into a New York loft dungeon. which wasn't stressful, except I would sometimes... I got another job next on the Dana Carvey show.
Yes.
And I would come home, you know, after being with all these cynical writers, and I would come home and there'd be like a 60-year-old man dusting in a French maid outfit because my wife was a dominatrix. And I'm like, oh, honey, does it have to be tonight? I'm exhausted.
But I mean, you have to tailor things.
She's
to
like,
point.
Hit him if you want. I don't want to.
Yeah, right. It stops being fun after a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was a Dick Van Dyke episode, actually.
Yeah. He'd make a good character for Frankenhole.
Dick Van Dyke. I would love to have Dick Van. Yeah.
So then, what happened?
After the Dana Carvey show, I'm canceled really quickly.
Good hard-hitting question, Joel.
What?
It's a good hard-hitting question.
Thank you. You can always say that to somebody, and then what happened? And they will continue,
unless you don't right now.
And then what happened? This is I don't know if you ever saw My Dinner with Andre, but Andre did all the talking, and Wallace Shawn just said, and then what? For the first, like, 45 minutes of that movie, which I love, by the way. But Dana Carvey's show, do you want to talk about that one at all?
Oh, yeah.
Sure, because animation happened on that one.
Yeah.
I think I started writing a animated script for that show about, I forget, it was two classic cartoon characters. It might have been like David and Goliath or something like that, who were gay, you know. I don't know, it was a bad idea. But Smigel took it and made it two superheroes who were gay. And that's where that came from. Charlie Kaufman was a writer on that show. Louis C.K., Mike Steinoff, who played Anthony on TV's Blossom, who I went to college with.
Is that his official name now?
Yeah, that's all I call him. Even still, he doesn't like it. Who else? Robert Carlock, who's the head writer on 30 Rock, and John Glazer, just, you know, everyone. And then me. And then, but he, Charlie actually had a great idea that I thought would have been perfect for the show, where it would be Weird Al Yankovic's brother, Weirder Al Yankovic, would take his parody song, like, Eat It, and make it schmeet it over the documentary. And then later in the documentary, you find out he had another brother called Normal Al Yankovic, who would take eat it and make it beat it again. And I actually, then we didn't do it on Dana Carvey's show, which I thought would be perfect. Then I pitched it to Mr. Show, and we didn't really do specific parodies like that on that. But I still, maybe we could do it here tonight.
Sure. Scott Aukerman kind of took that. The weirder Al.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't. He's Weirder Scott.
Oh, weird.
And does bad songs.
Oh,
off of Weird Al. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh. Well, I'm sure he didn't hear that story. Yeah, right. I worked with him.
And then what happened?
Well, that's a really good question. Because then. I moved on to, during the Dana Carvey show, my friends Bob and David sent me these tapes of the first season of their show, Mr. Show, and I said, wow, I'd love to work on it, and they said, come out to LA, and I said, sure, when's the next season start, and they said, it's HBO in about 2 years. So in that time, I took a job at Letterman, who had, I guess it might have been 3 or 4 years into, I guess 3 years into moving to CBS.
Okay.
It is CBS, right? Yeah. And
94.
That was around, we moved there around 92, 93 when Conan started. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just took it, I knew it was going to be a nightmare because I had been on all these shows that had just started, and it's a really exciting process to be on, like at the ground level of a show. And this was a dinosaur show that was kind of dying at the time. You know, he was fighting.
Been on for 40 years at that point.
Well, you know, it was like 12 or 13 years, and he was trying to beat Leno, so he had country western acts on, and you know. Yeah.
Did you just wink at me?
I did.
Yeah, what's next?
I don't even know.
Hi. How are you?
Country Western. It gets me going.
I went there and basically just didn't do much. I wrote a couple bits for the show. I remember one bit. It just seemed like the hackiest Letterman thing I could do, which was outside at 30 Rock, instead of putting up a giant Christmas tree on Thanksgiving, they stuffed a giant turkey. And Letterman loved it. You know? That was like one of the first ideas, and I was just like, ugh. Because I couldn't get the ideas I really liked on. And finally, like, I wouldn't write the top 10 lists because I'm not a joke writer, and I didn't, they were all Clinton jokes at the time.
Right.
And they said, look, you gotta write some Clinton or some top 10 list jokes. And I said, all right. And I just sat down and tried to write the stupidest, hackiest stuff ever. And I got like 8 jokes on one top 10 list. Just like tried to write the worst. So then Letterman ended and went to Mr. Show. And I know what you're gonna say, and then what?
Nope, I wasn't gonna say that.
Oh.
I was gonna say, that sounds good.
I worked on Mr. Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
Yeah. I was lucky to be there.
So your writing style, you're saying, would you still say you're not much of a joke writer versus a dialogue?
Yeah,
it just seemed like this had some good jokes in it.
Yeah, I'm more conceptual. I think like on the Dana Carvey show, Dana needs character joke bits, and I said to Robert, "Are you sure I'm right for this show?" And he's like, "No, we're going to do conceptual humor, and which is what really Charlie Kaufman does too. Charlie Kaufman, I think, got one bit on that show. He sat and he wrote being John Malkovich during that. It was a show that was more joke oriented, and I didn't get much on either, you know. Yeah, I don't write jokes. Yeah, long winded.
Yeah, you're right. Well, we're gonna take questions in a little bit.
We're gonna take a break
if you guys want. Yeah, for Mary Shelley's Frankenhole, do you obviously know a lot of the actors that are doing voiceovers.
Yeah, Scott Adsit, who I, you know, went to college with, and yeah, Britta Phillips, who was a friend of mine, who did the voice of Jem, which is
that's really nice. Hilarious.
Yeah, and Jay Johnston does voices, and Andy, of course.
Do you take their input? Are they doing work?
I don't think the show comes alive until we do the voiceover, and there's not a lot of improvising.
But there's room for it.
There's definitely room for it. I definitely encourage it, you know. Toward the beginning of the season, there was more improvising because we were still trying to find it. And then later, I could show another part of an episode where I had Dan Harmon, the creator of Community, come in and play Dr. Jekyll. He played Dr. Jekyll in that episode. This scene, we'll see a scene.
Let's take a look.
He came in. He actually did a lot of improvising, and then later, in another episode, I wrote to that improvising and developed that character even more. So we could watch both scenes as a sort of, you know, class study, you know, boring kind of.
Yeah, let's do that. Here's what we're going to do.
What?
We're going to do that. And then maybe if you guys have questions, we can take your questions and maybe answer them.
Please think of questions.
Yeah.
I want everyone in here to have a question.
I'm going to point at just areas.
I know a lot of you, he's your teacher. He'll fail you if you don't have a question.
That's right. That's right. I tell him. Okay, so let's set up the next clip.
Okay, hold on.
I'm going to take my seat. What if I just stood here and looked at you while you watched that? That'd be really weird. Nice.
Great. It's good. I love when like something is improvised, like you drew a picture of a tree and then an animator has to animate it.
Right. So that was Dan Harmon as Dr. Jekyll.
Yeah, and Jeff Davis as Frankenstein. Yeah.
So
is there a difference for writing for animation or for live action that you found?
That's a
in your
stupid
experience.
Question. No, I'm just saying that you had one question. I had to do that.
Yeah. We were doing a lot of live action stuff beforehand, late shows, and then the jump to.
When I write, I don't think about them being animated. So I might not be the right person to ask.
Okay.
For me, no. I picture live action. You know, they're usually not doing anything that amazing. Although, you know, the two examples, like someone giving himself a vagina. Well, we never see the vagina. Yeah. We could have done that live action if we wanted to. but I'm sure there's a difference. You know, when voiceover actors come who've done other shows. Come in and do it, they're like, wow, so we're not actually looking at animation and we're not putting our mouths here, because a lot of animated shows start with the animation and then you kind of build the dialogue around that, you know, especially for kids. There's the storyboards come first and then the voiceover. For me, it's like the script and then the voices sort of dictate everything. I think Adult Swim works that way a lot, except for something like Super Jail, probably, which is a very animated show. There's a reason for that show to be animated. There's no reason, usually, for like third season of Moral Oral is like just characters sitting around being sad. You know? Nothing is funnier to me than an animated character that doesn't move.
Well, I would say that's a good reason to make it animated. I think it would.
I love it. I mean, also you have all the license in the world to just make it as their emotions as surreal as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they're cartoons in their ideas and their sadness.
And also a puppet. being still can be really still.
Yeah, and it's also like, it's like a song break. Yeah, it's like a music break in a song. It's like, it's interesting, like, whoa, nothing's moving now.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there another clip you wanted to show, or should we open the floor? You guys will fall in.
Let's just take some
questions from people out there. I can't see you, so I'm going to walk right towards you.
I bet there's no questions.
There's one right there.
Walk to the mic, please. This is going to air. Yeah,
there's a microphone right there. Walk right over to it. It's being recorded for...
if you'd like to queue up. I think that's what they say.
Is that what they say?
I don't know.
You know, you're a musician.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you said that you and Dan Harmon started your own animation company.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if that had anything to do with the community episode.
That got us off the ground. Yeah. We needed something fast to pay for the castle. And
castles aren't cheap.
Well, castles are expensive.
I wrote on castles in Los Angeles.
So actually, someone at NBC said to Dan, do you ever want to do an animated show? And he went, cha-ching! And he also loved the idea of doing like a stop-motion Christmas special. And he called me up and he said how it was, at that point, it was September. And he said, do you think we could get one going? And I just said, yeah. And we rushed it, and but it was great. It got the castle on its feet, and it was a pretty good episode. You know, it looked great. So,
yeah. Is that going to be recurring?
Maybe
can't say.
You know what? I don't know if I could say or not, but I don't know.
I want it to be.
I don't think so far not. Not this season.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you.
A Nightmare Before Christmas parody. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Hello. When you're doing the voice work with actors, do you need tricks to get them to give you a performance that's really funny? Or do you just kind of let them do their own thing and just kind of sit back and enjoy the ride?
Well, my first trick is to hire a lot of funny people, and then I just say, just do it. We first get the script down as it's written, and then I just say, look, just have fun and fuck around, and we might use it, we might not, and we usually use a lot of it, you know. It's, it's not even a trick, really. I guess that's a trick. But,
they don't get angry at me afterwards. Over here, opposite Mike.
Hello. So, wondering what drew you to do stop motion originally, and clearly you like it if you keep doing it. So, I guess what's your draw to it, if you have a reason for that? You really like puppets?
Yeah, I mean, I love 3D. I've always like made monster models and crap like that. So I thought I could have a whole studio with all this stuff. And also, as I started working with it more and more, I became fascinated with the idea of these inanimate objects not only becoming animated, but also caring about them. Like when Moral World first started first season, it was a joke mostly. It was this little kid who was affected by his teachers around him, his authority figures, and fucked up. And it was like Dennis the Menace. And I didn't have much empathy for the character, but as I saw these animators who are artists really create this character that had three-dimensional emotions, I started rewriting in my head for this character, and I think that's why season three happened, where I left comedy harshly, and just created these characters that people were really emotionally invested in. You know, the five or six people who saw season three.
How long typically does it take to shoot one of these episodes?
If we're doing it right, a 11, 12-minute episode is a little over 5 or 6 days, because it's really a fun space to be in, because you have 15 to 18 stages up at the same time with all these huge sets and different animators, and like two stages could be animating the same scene at the same time, just different angles.
Right.
You know, so it's a fun sort of wonderland kind of thing.
So you could potentially be shooting on all the stages at once.
Yeah, we're shooting like at least 12, 13 stages at once. Jeez. And an animator's supposed to get around 9 to 10 seconds a day done.
Are you using SLR cameras and Dragon software?
Yep.
You guys all probably know about that, right?
Show off.
What? Being up on technology?
Looking so sick.
Just saying. My students know. That's what they use.
I really have a question for you.
Yes.
Did you ever think about expanding out of stop motion?
Out of stop motion?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the studio will be doing all kinds. We'll be doing live action. We'll be doing... I'm fascinated with stop motion, but I do have some ideas that are live action. Yeah, I mean, I started with live action, you know. So I'm just, I don't know. I'm kind of a big baby. I love all these toys lying around. You know? But I'm definitely into doing all kinds of formats.
Also, what's your creative process for coming up with new shows?
Drinking?
Staying hydrated.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same process I have for hitting on women. Slightly different when I hit on men.
Same process I have when I want to
drink a little more when I hit on men. Mm. Mm. How are you tonight?
Good to meet
you. Question over to the right, left.
Hi, I'm just wondering, is there any limits to your humor? Because most people consider castrating a man and putting a vagina on him taboo.
Well, go fuck yourself. No, I don't really... That's a really good question, because I ask myself that all the time. Because when I write something, I have no idea how taboo it is. It just makes me laugh. And I still have this feeling that I'm writing in my studio apartment in Chicago, like no one's ever going to see this. You know, it's just fun for me. I think that's the key to my creativity, is just to just... That's why I drink a lot, too. So I don't think too much about who is going to end up seeing this. Because, you know, you write all these crazy episodes, and you hand them in to the production people, and then you walk around the set and you go, oh, wait, you guys are making this? I'm so sorry. And then other people, like Standards and Practices in Atlanta, are calling me up saying, you can't do this. You know, that scene where the creature from the Black Lagoon waitress, you know, shoots caviar out of her pussy. They say, well, you can't do it. And I said, well, what if it's from behind? Well, no, you still can't do it. Well, what if she's got an apron? You don't see it. We don't put a weird... too gross of a sound effect. All right, already, do it. And the first, I wish I had it here, the first take, we don't do a lot of takes in animation because it takes a lot of time, but it was literally, the animator was like, I was like, I don't care if that passes, I don't want to see that. So yeah, I'm not a good judge usually on what the limits should be. I let other people have that shitty job.
Also, what's the worst comeback you've had about any of the scenes that you've done?
The worst, like notes or?
What have the lawyers said that made you sweat?
I wrote something once on the Dana Carvey show where Louis C.K. was the head writer, and he obviously didn't like it. And he said to me, this is the best this I ever read. I was like, no, thanks. But like, as in terms of like Standards and Practices, I wrote on Conan, I had this character called Slim Organ Body, who was a slim good body kind of parody, only his organs were on the outside of his body, and they were all, they were literally on the outside of his body. He was a freak. And, you know, he turned, you know, lemons into lemonade and started teaching about the body. But he was a depressed guy, and he never got laid. But then one episode, I had his wife come on, Trim Pregnant Body. And I wrote it, and before I wrote it, I went to props and costumes and said, make this, I want to see all the organs on the outside of the body and also the nine-month baby just gestating in there. And they said, okay. And it cost like $5,000. And they made it, and all the writers said, oh, great. Can we do it? And I was like, I don't know. And Standards of Practice says, we need to see this. So I had a woman put it on, and Standards of Practice says, literally, you know, here's the woman. No, there's no way you could. And just walked away. Like, I still have that costume. My dominatrix of life wore for Halloween.
I think that's your Halloween. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah.
Question over
here. All right,
here.
Sit down. You asked two questions.
No, those were good.
They were good ones.
Good. Yes.
Let's give my hand for the question.
At all. Anyway, I'm not really clapping. I'm making no sound.
Okay, go ahead. You didn't talk about it much, but I was just wondering, like, what was it like working on a show like Mr. Show, just because it was, like, so revolutionary?
Yeah, I mean, that was a dream job. That was, like, the show I had the most fun on, because literally anything that made you laugh got on the show. If the criteria was that it became a bigger story than just the joke, and usually that just took sitting around for 5 days and figuring out what it was, you know, as opposed to 12 days, which were all the links connecting everything, you know, those were a nightmare. But if you did a bit with a friend at a bar, it usually, and it made you laugh, it got into a show. I wrote one of my sketches. I wrote a play in Chicago, and after every performance of the play, my friends like Scott Atsit and I and Jay Johnston, we would get up on stage and just do fake auditions. And I did one audition where it was the guy came out and he said, I'm going to do an audition from the play The Audition by Kevin Hollerwood. Can I use this chair? And the director said, yeah. I'm like, no, please. That's part of my monologue. And it was this scene that just became this mathematical puzzle. But it came out as a bit, and we ended up doing it on the show, and David Cross did it beautifully.
Yeah, that was a great sketch.
Do you think they'll...
Do we have the internet on here? We could probably bring it up.
We could bring it up. Mm. Do you think they'll do something like that again?
Maybe, I don't know. Every now and then they'll do a live stage show, you know, travel around. You know, it's going to be like the Kids in the Hall, you know. Yeah. Like people are going to get depressed. Everyone looks so old now.
Makes it funnier, I think.
Another question over here.
Just a really quick question. Going from funny idea to funny story to writing funny and convincing dialogue, is that something you would be able to talk about? Like, what part of the process do you enjoy? Which do you find the most challenging, and ways that you kind of fight through those speed bumps?
I like coming up with like a crazy, crazy idea and then start writing very normal dialogue around it. Usually my first drafts have very little jokes in it. And sometimes I'll just bring other people and say, can you throw some jokes in here? Because to me, what's funny is someone talking about an insane idea in as seriously as possible, you know? But, you know, you show it to an audience and it's just conceptual. It's a conceptually funny thing, and you need that immediate sort of just laughter and punch in something, you know. But I don't know. Does that answer? I feel like I failed with that answer.
No, I feel like that was perfectly succinct.
I hate myself.
So, Azrin, how are we doing? Time-wise. What time is it?
20 minutes.
Great. Alan.
I thought we were like way over.
Yeah. Oh, I think Alan. Joel. You know what I think?
What?
I think Mike Overbeck has a question. Mike Overbeck, right there. Here he comes. Mike Overbeck.
Show Mike Overbeck.
Yeah, clap for him. Clap it up for Mike.
Yeah.
I was wondering, for every funny idea, how many unfunny ideas do you write?
About a million. probably. I don't know. I mean, I'm very insecure. I don't even think any of my ideas at the end of the day are funny until I hear somebody laugh, you know. So I don't throw away a lot because I write a lot of first drafts drunk. And then I rewrite.
You can't find them.
So and then I rewrite. For you young writers out there, writing drunk, first draft by hand, and then type it in on coffee, and then take a nap, wake up and drink again. And rewrite all the shit that you ruined being sober. it's a tough question because at one stage, I like everything I write, and I try. If I write it down, it's because I like it, you know. And then sometimes I go back and I say to myself, well, this isn't as funny as when I thought of it. But I have to trust myself that at some point it was funny, and hope I could channel the old Dino again and get that funny back. But sometimes it doesn't really work. What am I out of my mind?
You are directly in your mind.
Right. That might be the problem.
That's the only place I could be.
Yeah, really. So, any other questions from anybody? Alan,
what?
Questions from you about anything? Go ahead.
When can I leave?
Alan, that's my question. When can he get out of here?
I think we should.
I do have a question. I do have a question, actually.
Go ahead.
What does the future hold for Dino Stamatopoulos?
You mean tonight?
Yes, tonight. Wait, in particular, we might be able to help you with that, but you go.
What are you doing after the show?
Well, I think if I have a few more drinks, I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, what's next for the production company, and
well, like I said, like the Dan Harmon show, I want to. I'm writing a special for More World that may or may not happen, depending on how the script turns out. I think it'll be really good. It's I want to do an oral origin episode,
yeah,
where he's like 5 years old and he becomes who he is, and his brother is just born. You know, I want to do a lot more animated shows at the castle, and maybe some live action shows. I want to do a show about. I want to do Cheers only, you know, with
only real
my perspective of Cheers. Which ain't that funny?
By the way, Mom and Dad, who are sitting up there, remember how I love David and Goliath? You should check out More Oral.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
He's such a good boy. He must be proud.
I think I'm more like More Oral. Anyway.
Fired.
There's someone else at a microphone ready to go. Go, person.
I listened to your interview on the Mark Maron's podcast. And
yeah, that was cool.
You had mentioned something about trying stand up, and I'm wondering if you want to talk about that. Did you do stand up in one
morning? I did do stand up. Here's the kind of thing that I did. I came out and I was like, hi, I'm Dino. I'm a comedian. My job is to make you laugh. Yeah, like that. Yeah, we need more of that. Yeah, keep it going. All right, yeah, we can do it. If we all work together here. Oh, a little bit more of that. Yeah, do it! Woo! Sing so hard! So I did that for 15 minutes.
wait, you're done?
Oh, yeah. I'm old. I chickened out. It was usually it didn't. So I wasn't on the audience's side when I first came out. So I'd be like, my job is to make you laugh, and then just nothing. And I'm like, well, I guess I suck at this. And then there'd be a little laughter. I'm like, yeah, that's what we need.
You.
So having sold two shows, your second show, is there anything you did differently dealing with the network? Like, did you have anything the first time? Like, we're not going to do that this time.
Oh, yeah.
And what were those things?
Well, because third season was something that Lazo just hated, I wrote out a whole outline for Frankenhole, and it didn't sound that funny to me. You know, it was a lot about like how the creature, Frankenstein's creation, was a sad goth kid, and you know, and people were just miserable, and Frankenstein was an immortal who lost his will to live, but he had to live forever, and so like in the middle of the outline, I just wrote, by the way, this is all gonna be really funny. And he called me and said, Dino, I cut that sentence out and I put it up on my wall. And you better fucking stick with that. And I did. I visited him in Atlanta, and he wasn't there at the time, and I walked into his office and it was there on his wall. He was like, he was adamant that I would make a show that was funny.
Thank you.
I see Tim Finn sprinting to a microphone, and
oh, he lost out.
He lost out. Sorry.
Okay. I know you mentioned how moral of the country's been changing over the season. Could you talk more a little bit about one of your favorite episodes or one of your favorite moments?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I can. Do you want me to? The first episode of the third season was I hadn't written a lot about Oral's mom, and because I'm just not that good at writing for women, and so I thought let's devote a whole episode to her. And the second season ended with a camping trip with Oral and his dad, and it was just them out in the woods and crazy things happening. And I thought, what was she doing during this? And it was just all about, it was an episode called Numb, where she just woke up in the morning, used power tools to masturbate with. And the power tools kept getting bigger and bigger, and they didn't work. And finally, she got a huge one called the hand jack, where there was a big warning, you know, not for women or children, you know. And she ended up hurting herself and going to a doctor, the doctor in the show, who became fascinated with her pain. He had sort of a sadistic streak in him. And she reacted to this in a very positive way, because he actually was passionate about her, and she hadn't had that in years. And it was a whole episode just about that, and that was the beginning of the end, really. Mike Lazo called me up with that one. He said, Dino, there's one joke in this whole script. And I said, where? I gotta get it out.
Are all of these on a DVD collection, by the way?
No, they won't release the DVD.
Really?
No. They release DVDs of everything in the world, but not that. Yeah.
Tim Finn.
Stand up.
So a visual artist, his or her style will change as he or she gets older, and a singer's voice changes, and a band has different eras as their music changes. Has your writing changed as you've gotten older, or as you've moved past different projects, or as you've moved in the country?
I think it's in some ways it's changed, and in some ways I've reverted back to what it really was before I started writing for television. Because when I wasn't writing for TV, back when I was back in the 90s, I wrote a play just about this couple who had a kid, and the husband freaks out because he's not a confident human being to have a kid, and ends up inadvertently, it's a comedy and a musical, but he ends up inadvertently killing the kid, taking it out on the coldest day of the year where it's 30 below, and completely responds to the child at this point because he's failed as much as he could fail, and now he relaxes. He's like, now I could raise this kid. I've already fucked up more than I could fuck up anything. So he decides to keep it around, and the wife, who wants a family so bad, decides to do it with him. To hilarious conclusions. But it was sort of a dour, sad comedy, black comedy, that I couldn't do toward the beginning of my career, and I've kind of come around to that. But I think I'm doing it with a little more finesse now, because I'm, you know, a lot older and wiser.
I know you said you've been writing since being in Ottawa. Has Ottawa affected your writing?
Look, I sit a lot more in one place because I'm full of, I've never eaten so much poutine in my life.
I know.
Yeah. So I can't.
There's shacks all over the place.
I really thought I was going to die the other night. Yeah. I woke up, I thought I was going to have a stroke.
Have you been to the poutinerie?
No. I can't go to the poutinerie. No. I really have to replace my blood, like with Keith Richards' blood.
Yeah. Just to feel healthy again. Yeah. Dragon blood, lion blood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Well, it seems to me that this is the perfect time to say, where can people go to find more about you? Do you have a personal website? Do you have, where do you want people to go? Direct them, direct us to your stuff.
I might be on Elgin at some bar tonight.
Hanging out on Elgin?
Yeah.
Well,
I actually had to retrace my steps the other day. I was going from bar to bar saying, is there a bar that looks, there's a bar in the middle, and it's kind of like, it's too young of a bar for me to be in.
Yeah, it's, yeah, you were at the standard.
I know I wasn't dreaming it. I was so drunk.
Yeah. What time does, what date does the second season of Mary Shelley's Frankenwald?
I think it's scheduled for February 5th, which isn't a comment on the show, by the way. Adult Swim, because they have such short seasons, they like to stagger their openings. So I don't think they hate Frankenwald. Well, they might. I mean, I don't know. But it's not going to be till February 5th. We have them all shot, and they're just in the can waiting. Some of them still have numbers underneath them, as you see. But there is going to be a mini marathon on Halloween night with new, some new animation and new bits in between as interstitial bits that Great. I'm actually excited about. Might be free. So, yeah, it's going to be an hour of four episodes with like eight little interstitial bits.
You know, another great Halloween costume, by the way. Mm. Lauren and Mark Hoffman, you guys come up with this? The sexy ghost. The sexy ghost is just a sheet with holes cut out from the nipples.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was going further with that, the sexy invisible wound.
Oh, yeah, the naked woman.
It's very conceptual.
Who was never in your apartment.
Well, everybody, you can definitely check out our podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, I have nothing to really plug.
Plug our podcast. Oh, by the way, we're having a website release party tonight at the Extended Stay Hotel.
Yeah, room number
1119. It's come see our new website. Have a drink on us.
What time?
It's going to be after competition 5-4, whatever's tonight.
5.
Midnight.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Midnight. And check out our podcast, FFCAST.com.
Yeah.
You're able to get that one.
And subscribe on iTunes.
And subscribe on iTunes. We're now up there.
Yeah.
As a week ago.
Thank you for coming.
Ottawa. In the last words for us?
No. Okay. Thank you, Ottawa, so much. You guys were great. Great questions. We'll see you the next time.
Good night.
Thanks.
Good night, everybody.